Generally follow the threefold path of pious material life, namely religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Not having time to reflect on any higher purpose, they become the killers of their own soul. Purport. Those who are completely in the darkness of ignorance and thus bereft even of material pious life commit innumerable sinful activities and suffer greatly. Due to such intense suffering, such persons sometimes seek the shelter of the devotees of the Lord, and being blessed by such transcendental association, are sometimes elevated to the highest perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness. Those who are not completely sinful experience some mitigation of the miseries of material life, and thus develop a false sense of well-being within the material world. Because those who are materially pious generally obtain worldly prosperity, bodily beauty, and a pleasant family situation, they become falsely proud of their position and are not inclined to associate with or accept instructions from the devotees of the Lord. Unfortunately, all material activities, whether pious or impious, are inevitably contaminated by sinful activity. Those who are proud of their piety and do not like to hear about Krishna sooner or later fall down from their artificial position. Every living entity is an eternal servant of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, until we surrender to Krishna, our position is actually always impious. The word akshanikaha, not having even a moment to reflect, is significant in this verse. Materialistic persons cannot spare a single moment for their eternal self-interest. This is a symptom of misfortune. Such persons are considered to be killing their own souls because by their obstinacy they are preparing a dark future for themselves from which they will not escape for a very long time. A sick man receiving medical treatment may be encouraged by the preliminary results of the doctor's care. But if the patient becomes falsely proud of the preliminary progress in his treatment and prematurely gives up the doctor's orders, thinking himself already cured, there will undoubtedly be a relapse. The words ye kaivalyam asamkra daha in this verse clearly indicate that material piety is a long way from perfect knowledge of the lotus feet of Krishna. The words ye kaivalyam asamprapta in this verse clearly indicate that material piety is a long way from perfect knowledge of the absolute truth. If one gives up his spiritual progress before achieving the lotus feet of Krishna, he will undoubtedly fall back down into the most unpleasant material situation, even if he has achieved his personal realization of the Brahman effulgence, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Aruya Krich Trina, Param Padam Tataha Patantya Daha. Om Ajnana Simirandasya Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Dena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Tadatita Padantikam Mukham Gharo Divachalam Pankum Langayate Girim Yat Kripata Maham Bande Shri Guru Dina Karanam. First point in the purport is that those who are very much influenced by the mode of ignorance will be put into a position of suffering. Krishna explains that in the Bhagavad Gita in the 16th chapter. There are two types of persons in the creation. Does anybody know what those two types of persons are? Yes, the asuras and the suras, the devotees and the demons. Those who are influenced by the demoniac mentality get reactions to their behaviours, reactions to their activities. There's a fault with the modern civilization, if you like. Modern culture is such that people just ignore the fact that there's a future and that there are consequences for one's actions, and that if one performs activities influenced by the mind of ignorance, then one's future will be influenced by the mode of ignorance, which means a lower birth, either in the lower planetary systems or in the animal species. Now, it mentions here in the purport, those persons who are influenced by the mode of ignorance may take advantage of the association of the devotees, and by that association, be elevated. But everybody can, by associating with the devotees, be elevated in consciousness. We have an interesting situation in our current experience, because what we find is that the demons and the devotees live in the same bodies. Right? So the problem. It's hard to determine, you know, who's a demon and who's a devotee, because you'll find people who are engaged in devotional service. And yet, ostensibly, externally, they they're born in inauspicious circumstances. And this is not uncommon. If we look at the case of Prahlad Maharaj, if we look at the case of Ritrasura, different personalities, we see that their birth may be in very inauspicious circumstances, but as a result of their association with the devotees, an outcome from that apparently contaminating circumstance, a very high degree of devotion. Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, those are very elevated devotees. So the point is that even if a person is very much contaminated by the modes of material nature, the modes of ignorance, by the association with devotees and by the engagement in devotional service, one can be elevated. And one is elevated basically by cultivating activities in the mode of goodness. But a very specific kind of goodness, pure goodness, not material goodness, but pure goodness. In other words, transcendental devotional service. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that there are three types of activities. Karma, vikarma, and akarma. Right? Obviously, vikarma, or activities that are not recommended, degrade us. Activities, karma, in other words, following the basic rules and regulations of a civilized society, working according to one's duty, following the different ashramas of life, one will gradually prosper. But even still, vikarma and karma, even though karma is positive, certainly is positive, it still doesn't free us from material existence. And so therefore, you know, Krishna mentions in the book, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Avajana Ujuna. Right? Whether you're living in Brahma's planet or whether you're living in a lower planetary system, you still have to pay your birth, work hard, and then die, basically. Right? That's the program in the material world. We could just do a test here and see how many people have a leisurely life. Hands up all those who have a leisurely life. Please raise your hands. Nobody. Everybody's working hard. Even the people who've got a leisurely life are working hard doing that. The nature of the material world. So karma and vikarma. Karma is better because there's not as great a degree of suffering. But still, even if a person is engaged in positive activities of karma, still there's the reactions of birth, death, old age and disease. So this verse is talking about those persons who are engaged in karma and who are prospering as a result of their engagement in pious activities. Now, in the purport it mentions, those who are suffering, they're seeking, you know, mitigation of this misery. They'll associate with the devotees to seek relief from that suffering. So in one sense, you know, a suffering situation is beneficial for devotional life. In one sense. Although, you know, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita there are four types of pious people. And the arto, artati, jigyasu, you know, those who are suffering or those who are seeking some material amelioration, they'll surrender to the Lord. But one of the problems with that is that when, by following regulated in devotional life, their miseries are mitigated, but then they think, oh, great, now I can enjoy the material world again. Right? But that's not what happens, and that's what this verse is warning about. It's saying, you may, or well, the experience of the devotees is that a person pursuing material life and who is acting in a pious way, according to the karma, if you like, so good activities, pious activities, they get material prosperity, but then what happens when they have that material prosperity? They become proud. And you know, in one sense, we live in that kind of a culture today. The purpose of life is to enjoy material prosperity. And living in Australia means, what? material prosperity. Right? In terms of struggle, where would you prefer to live? India or Australia? India. Okay. Why are you living here then? You have a choice. But, you know, a person's activities speak louder than their words. And in fact, you know, even from a devotional point of view, from the point of view of devotional service, for those, even though India has a culture of religiosity, actually, where do they become devotees? Where is it actually better even to perform devotional service? Although it's not impossible, but it is, at least in my experience, in my observation of life, you know, there's less of a struggle in Australia than there is in India. Really, I mean, you know, look at all the... You can see what's happening to our planet, especially in a place like India. You know, the Indian society is aspiring for the middle class values of the West. Now, what's that doing to the environment in India? What is it doing to it? Pollution. What was that?
Destroying.
You know, we all want to have our motor cars. We all want to live in comfortable apartments. But, you know, with that quantity of people, there's not enough space. So if everybody gets a motor car, right, in India, if everybody gets a motor car, they all at 9 o'clock in the morning, they all decide to go to work, what happens? Get a traffic jam, and you can't go anywhere. So what happens? And the pollution is just killing everybody. You know, I came out of... I got to Singapore on... what the day it was? The other day. I went to see my friends in Singapore, and I was coughing up all this black stuff. And I wasn't smoking cigarettes, and I didn't know anybody was smoking cigarettes. I was just walking around the streets of Delhi. So anyway, people in India tend to be more pious than people in Australia. You know, it's not difficult to have people understand that life is a struggle. You know, when you preach from the Bhagavad Gita and from the Bhagavatam, that life is a struggle, then people in India will agree, yes, life is a struggle because they're struggling. Even if they're wealthy and comfortable, it's still a struggle for existence. But in a place like Australia, if you preach to people and tell them, you know, life is a struggle for existence, they say, well, we're okay. Although if you analyse things carefully, you can see, actually everybody is struggling. What are people facing now? What are people facing at the moment with the economic crisis? Unemployment. Yeah, Prabhupada says this in the Upanishad. They're very comfortable, they're well off, but what's their fear? Will I be able to keep my job? And in one sense, you know, the society that we live in, not the society of devotees, but the materialistic society that we live in, is characterized or exemplifies this verse. That people are very well off. They're comfortable. And so they're not inclined to seek spiritual guidance. They don't think it's important. They don't think it's necessary. Why? We're doing okay. What's the problem? But this verse points out the dangers of that kind of mentality. Because, as is mentioned in the purport, unless one surrenders to Krishna, then whether you're performing karma or vikarma, basically you're performing sinful activities. One is a higher grade of sinful activity. Vikarma means basically all activities which are not recommended. But even those who are performing karma, positive, you know, good activities, still there are reactions that come as a result of those kind of behaviours. And of course, in the society that we live in, actually it's mixed. It's not good karma at all. As you can see, the behaviour of people is drinking and intoxication and basically all of the regulative principles are ignored. Basically, civilised, according to the Vedas anyway, civilised life, human life, is non-existent in so-called human civilization. They're basically living like animals. Polished animals, you know, we drive around in our BMWs and our Mercedes-Benz and so forth, and think we're advanced. There's Prabhupada points to, you know, you're driving around on four wheels and the dog's running around on four legs, but what's the difference? Not that much difference. And what happens is, as a result of that kind of activity, by that association of the modes of material nature, by the influence of ignorance and passion, one is pulled down. And we're pulled down basically into the animal species of life. And the animal species of life, one is forced to then satisfy the same requirements, but the animals and the human beings, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. These are the basic requirements of any kind of existence. But in the animal species, one has a very unpleasant means of satisfying those demands. Right? Very unpleasant. And it's recommended that in the human form of life, one shouldn't live like that. That life is not meant for working so hard just to satisfy the eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Yet that's what most people do. And because of their material prosperity, they don't have any time for spiritual life. This verse, this word here. What is it? Akshanika. I'm too busy. I'm too busy. Even as devotees, we can sometimes make ourselves too busy for spiritual life. Let's be careful. Akshanika. But especially materialistic people. No, mate, I'm okay. I'm too busy. Surely right. But people don't understand, actually, it won't be right. In pursuance of material activities, one will simply be degraded. The consciousness will be degraded. How can we see that? We can see that. So we have to, I guess there's a couple of lessons here for us, in one sense. If we're looking internally, or looking in the society of devotees, we have to be very careful not to let this kind of mundane mentality creep into our devotional service. We have to keep our activities focused on devotional service. Especially when most of us are householders, and we are working pretty much in the same kind of occupations, even working with this kind of people. And so the infection, if you like, of materialism is very prominent in society, and the devotee can have a relapse. You know, there's this idea that, you know, by going to church and praying, then you'll get your daily bread. Right? And certainly, you know, a person who leads a regulated life in the mode of goodness will prosper materially. And you know, we see that in some of the religious traditions of the world. That's what people go to church for. Artha, or no, dharma, artha, karma. They're looking for satisfaction of their desires. So what do? They lead a regulated, even devotional life, pious life. And so what happens? A culture that lives and works like that prospers. But the danger of that prosperity is that people think, oh, this is the purpose of, you know, going to church. But it's not really the purpose of going to church. Praying to God, please give me this and give me that and give me the other thing. The purpose of going to the temple or engaging in devotional service is not to necessarily materially prosper. Of course, that's, you know, usually not the case anyway. We may prosper materially, but the material world is designed in such a way so that there will always be some struggle. Jamna mitru jara vyati dukkha dosha anudarshanam. A wise person understands that in material existence there will always be some difficulties. So, and they'll also understand that life is not, you know, it's a problem to be managed, but it's a problem that you can't solve. Right? You can't solve the fact that you're going to die, but you have to manage it. You can't solve the fact that you have to go to work. You know, you've got to pay the bills, you've got to pay the gas, you've got to pay the electricity, you've got to pay the rent. Now, we don't like doing those things, but in the course of our duties, in the course of our regular activities, we can solve those problems to the degree that we can manage them. But that's not the real purpose of existence. The real purpose of existence is to re-establish our relationship with Krishna, re-establish ourselves in our original spiritual identity. And this is what this verse is saying here. This verse is saying here, for those who are simply absorbed in material existence, they have some prosperity. They have some wealth. They have some influence. They have some power. They have education. They live in a cultured society. You know, things are organised. When you drive down the streets of Melbourne, there's not litter everywhere. And usually, you know, there's no potholes. Right? And everything sort of works. I mean, there are the occasional disasters. But there's a problem with that because one becomes proud, one becomes complacent. And spiritual life then ceases to have any meaning or any any relevance. It doesn't seem important. And so therefore those persons being so busily engaged in their material pursuits, they don't realise that not pursuing or not endeavouring for spiritual advancement, they are actually creating a very inauspicious future for themselves. So we shouldn't become enamoured by that kind of mentality, that our lives are simply meant for getting big bank balances and buying a house and just working hard. Not that we shouldn't do those things, but that's not the goal of existence. And we can achieve those things within our means. You know, Krishna, in the Isopanishad it mentions, Isopanishad covers a lot of these points. Isavasyam idam sarvam yatkincha jagatam jagat tena chaktena bundita margida kasya sviddhanam. The Isopanishad mentions that everything in the creation is owned and controlled by the Ishvara, the Isha, that's Krishna. But he allocates to each one of us our quota to use as ours. Right? That's our. We're allowed to take proprietorship of that. We're allowed that. Of course, in recognition of who's the ultimate proprietor. Right? You know, when I speak to the schools and other groups, you know, when we're giving presentations, one of the first questions is, what's that stuff on your face? Like, what is that? The way I explain it is, well, it's clay, obviously, but I explain it that the marking of the tila is in recognition of who is the owner of everything, who is in charge. The body is like a house, right? Our body is a house. It's a residence in which the soul lives. But we are not the proprietor of the house. We may be the tenant. We're like the tenant in the house. You know, we're given this material body, but we don't know how we got it. All of a sudden we woke up one day and we realized, well, here I am. Right? But very few of us know how we got here. You know, we sort of work it out over time. You know, I came out of my mother's womb. Of course, we don't remember that, but that's what we're told. And we're not really sure where we've come from. We sort of have an idea of where we are, and we usually have no idea of where we're going. Who am I? Where am I? Where am I going? So anyway, the devotees recognize that actually I'm coming from Krishna, coming from the spiritual realm. Only I've become contaminated by my association with the material energy, and so as a result of that I'm thinking that I'm the body. But actually I'm not the body. The body is just a residence for me, and I'm the soul. And so therefore, in deference to and in recognition of Krishna's proprietorship, then we mark our body with the sign of the tila to say, you know, okay, Krishna is the proprietor, just like we put a cross on a church to recognize this is the house of God. So similarly, we put the tila on to remind us who the body actually belongs to through our purification, actually. Whereas for the materialistic people, they just think, you know, I am the body and I can do what I like with it. But the devotee recognizes the body is a gift from Krishna. Especially the human form of life is a special gift given to us. Not solely for sense gratification, but certainly sense gratification is allowed. That's why we have the Varnashram system, is to purify that natural tendency for sense gratification in such a way so that that can be exercised or engaged positively, but with the ultimate goal of self-realization. Real purpose of human life is to get that ultimate goal of self-realization. So therefore, Krishna allows, this is Vasyami Dham Sagam. He's the controller of everything, but he gives each one of us our facility to utilize. Right? So it's ours to utilize with the understanding that ultimately it belongs to Krishna. Right? Not that it's all one and you know you can just take what you like. Right? It mentions you can accept that which is your quota and recognize that which belongs to others as well. Recognize to whom it all belongs, ultimately to Krishna. But that means also we recognize that you know you have your quota and I shouldn't take yours. Right? My Prabhupada gave the example of his watch. And he said, you know, this is my watch. Okay, it belongs to Krishna, but if you want to take it, I'll fight you for it. Right? So we're allowed to have a certain quota, and that quota is meant to be used for progressing our spiritual life. Not that, you know, that quota is the be-all and end-all. And that's what I should work for, and I should try to increase it more and more and more. As this is one of the major problems facing our so-called modern society. Consumerism. You know, we're being encouraged to consume and consume and consume and consume. But what happens? In pursuing consumerism, we destroy the very planet that we live on. Now, does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. It makes sense that that's what's going to happen. But it doesn't make sense to do it. And this is why Prabhupada said, you know, the Krishna consciousness movement is actually meant to teach people how to live a simple life so that whatever we've got is enough to go around. Because what happens is, if we all consume, you know, reading a book at the moment, I haven't read it for a little while, I'm too busy, but there's a book. It's called Hot, Flat and Crowded. And it explains, you know, what's going to happen to our world. What's happening at the moment, actually. And he the writer of this book defines a unit of consumerism as an American. This is his measurement. And he says if everybody in the world wants to consume at this level of an American, this is the consumer unit, then we're just going to destroy the planet so that none of us can live, basically. And this is where, you know, Krishna consciousness actually, Prabhupada wanted to encourage simple living with time for, you know, spiritual life, high thinking. Because and that means basically we're going to have to modify our existence. Right? This is not going to be a popular solution to the world's problems. Because it means we have to lower our level of consumerism. And the only way you can do that is by making some spiritual advancement. Otherwise, you know, material existence is so, the mode of passion is so all-consuming that all you want to do is, you know, give me more, give me more, give me more, give me more. This is what the whole economy is based on. Expansion. And, you know, when it contracts and there's a disaster, no, I can't consume as much as I used to. Right? So this is one reason why we have to be careful not to become consumed by consumerism, right? As devotees, we have to learn to be satisfied with a peaceful, simpler existence where we manage our lives in such a way so that we do have time for our spiritual life. Now, the other challenge for us is we're living in this society and we know what the problems are. And we also know what the solutions are. So we should be practicing the solutions. We should be putting the solutions into practice. And we should be thinking of ways to I've told you who the enemy is in the Bhagavatam class. Show off. Hare Krishna kids are show offs. I don't know if you've noticed or not. So, where was I? Yes, yeah, solutions. We should be practicing the solutions. We should also be thinking of ways how to engage others in positive activities of devotional service so that they can also, instead of being part of the problem, become part of the solution. And that basically, that presents some quite significant challenges for us. You know, especially in Australian society, because basically life is meant to enjoy. Right? If you tell people that life is suffering, they don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear it, practically speaking. Who likes to be told that life is meant for suffering? Right? We've all come to Australia to enjoy, haven't we? We wanted an easy life. So, some people, due to their piety, even though they have material prosperity, they're still able to hear the message of Krishna consciousness and actually able to engage in devotional service. That is a great good fortune. Right? Bhagya. Right? Bhagya Vanaji. A great and fortunate person is one who comes into the association of devotees. What is it? Brahmanda Bhumite Kone Bhagavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasad Poi Bhakti Lata Beej. By the mercy of Krishna, one gets the association of the devotees, and in the association of the devotees, one gets the Bhakti Lata. Right? And the Bhakti Lata is nourished by pious activities. Coming into the association of the devotees in and of itself is the pious activity, if you like. But on the whole, pious activities nourish and nurture the devotional creature, a creeper, devotional creature also. And in the association of the devotees, one's faith increases, one's faith is strengthened, so that one then will engage in devotional service. But as it points out here, those who are materially prosperous don't like to associate with the devotees, especially in Australia. So it's interesting, you know, we want to preach to the Western mindset, but the Western mindset in Australia is, let's have fun. Right? So it's interesting. You know, Indrajuna Maharaj's presentation of Krishna consciousness is such that basically we encourage everybody, okay, let's have fun. Right? It's entertainment. It's what people like. People in the Australian culture, they want fun. Just like when we go downtown chanting Hare Krishna, we're having fun. So people think, wow, the Hare Krishnas are having fun. Let's have fun with the Hare Krishnas. Because, you know, when they find out about some of the other things that we do in having fun, then they're not so enthused. Huh? No what? Then, you know, sometimes the kids will ask, do you watch television? I say, no, I don't watch television. They say, what do you do? It's sort of like, is there life after television? Can you live without a television? In fact, you know, I told this story before. There was a lady who was doing a survey. She came to our door and knocked on the door. And she was asking questions. She said, do you have a television? I said, no. She was stunned. He said, well, there's a man down the road who's making up for the fact that you don't have a television. He's got a television even in his toilet. Go watch television wherever he goes. So, we want to introduce people to Krishna consciousness, but because of their there's material contamination, and you know, they're successful. People living in Australia on the whole, of course, there's poor people, there's people economically impoverished, and there's people who are suffering mental illness and so forth. So there's a substrata of suffering in Australian society, but generally speaking, it's covered over. You just don't see it. Whereas, you know, if you drive in the streets of Noida or Delhi or Mumbai or wherever, then there's the beggars on the street, and you see the suffering. You can see it. You know, you get an appreciation of it straight away. So, how to engage such people in activities that are going to be ultimately beneficial for them is a challenge for the devotees. Yet we see, when people come in the association of the devotees, especially in Australia, they're very enthusiastic. If they can be encouraged in this mood of let's have fun, you know. Because that's not, you know, we're not devotees just to have fun. We do have fun, but that's a natural consequence of engaging in devotional service. But still, the devotees are mindful, dukkha dosha anudashanam, that material existence is basically miserable. And spiritual existence is the real pleasure. So we have to learn how to seek pleasure in a simpler, more natural way of life. And be satisfied in that life of simplicity, but we also have to think of ways to engage others so that they can be brought closer to their more natural, simple way of life. In Australia especially, because people are living somewhat of a naturally opulent kind of lifestyle, then we have to think of ways, you know, we can't promote Krishna consciousness in a fashion that's not attractive for that kind of an audience. Right? So we have to think of ways to engage that enjoying propensity, because we're all enjoyers, but this material enjoyment is actually it's a disease. It's actually a contamination. But in order, you know, Prabhupada mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's the duty of the acharya to think of ways to capture the attention of an unwilling audience. Right? Basically, people don't want to take a spiritual life. So it's up to the acharyas to think of ways how to capture. It's one of the reasons why Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. He took sannyas because he saw that his students were being disrespectful. They were being too familiar and they became critical of him. So he could see that by taking sannyas, that would further his preaching. That was the main reason for taking sannyas, was to further the preaching. So, you know, what might be attractive to the Indian audience, and we're basically speaking to an Indian audience at the moment, but might not be attractive to a Western mindset, because, you know what an arki is, or we all know what an arki is. And we don't mind sitting down and, you know, om namo, bhagavate, vasudevaya. We like that. That's actually our enjoyment. But for people who are conditioned to material enjoyment, that kind of thing is like strange. I remember when I first came to the temple and the devotees were doing the Prema Dvani prayers. You know, one person goes, Jaya Vishnu Pad, Paramahamsa, Prayavajimacharya, Astol, Tadasadashishi Mad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vidana Swami, Maharaj, and everybody goes, Zor! What is this? It's like a football team. What are they doing? You know, so there are some cultural anomalies that we have that are a barrier for some people to making advancement in devotional life. But we have to think of, you know, you have to lower the barriers and raise the attractiveness. And, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's not 1966 anymore. The hippies have gone. There are a few hippies, but not very many. Basically, we're dealing with a much more... And, you know, the hippies of the 60s and the 70s were interested in spiritual life. They were actually attracted. The mainstream culture was interested in spiritual life. And that's... If you look at the literature and if you look at the music and you look at the culture of the time, people were looking for spiritual life. At that time, it was a peculiar, you know, one of the most popular stage shows called Hair, right? It's one of the most popular stage shows called Hair. Had a song in it, and have a guess what the words of the song were? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. These are the words of the song. It was all the song was the Maha Mantra. So, you know, if you look at the culture of the time, it was a peculiar state of affairs. And times have changed. So, Prabhupada came at a time when people were just looking for spiritual life, but even then, not everybody was interested. Right? Not everybody was interested. So, as Prabhupada adjusted. So we also have to adjust. And so it's interesting, you know, it occurred to me that, in fact, Indrajana Maharaj is thinking about coming for a longer extended period and doing more shows in Australia with an eye to developing systems by which we can introduce people to a, you know, it's entertainment basically. And there's certainly more entertainment than there is Bhagavad Gita. Right? You know, we can sit down, we're happy to sit down and just hear Bhagavad Gita. Sādhāraman parīcārcā. Mame kam śaraṇam braja. Just surrender to Krishna. But if you go down the street, go down Swanson Street, just go out and people would say, Sādhāraman parīcārcā. Just surrender to Krishna. They're just going to think, you're crazy. You know, there's that guy who stands outside the post office building with the Bible, and he just yells out to everybody, 20 years ago, I was like you, until I found Jesus. And everybody just walks past him and says, you know, that guy's But it is a challenge for us. You know, we have quite a stable and strong devotional community. And we want to preach. Right? That's what, well, we should want to preach. And increase our numbers. But, you know, it's one thing to preach to the Indian community. That's pretty easy in one sense. That's not hard to do. Of course, it's not really easy, but it's easier. Right? It has its challenges, but we can see it. You know, there's some success. There are devotees chanting Hare Krishna. There are devotees reading Prabhupada's books. There are devotees taking initiation, serving, and increasing the number of devotees. But of course, Prabhupada wanted us to increase the number of devotees in not only in the Indian community. You know, when Prabhupada in Nairobi just saw the Indians coming in, he was not very happy with the devotees. So I don't want to preach to the Indians. I want to preach to the Africans. Because when they got some African boys, then Prabhupada's clothes got pinched. But still, Prabhupada wanted to preach to the Africans. And Brahmananda, you know, saw one boy had Prabhupada's hat, another one had his bead bag, another one had his dhoti on. So he took him outside, you know, what are you doing? You don't steal your guru's clothes. But even still, despite the difficulties, Prabhupada still wanted to preach to those people. So, you know, we need to think and act in such a way so that we're... And it's interesting, you know, in Australia we actually have a very favourable environment in which to preach. I was talking to the devotees in London about just our preaching in general, and the book distributor said to me, they said, you know, the Australians are really good to preach to, because when we meet an Australian, they say, yeah, I eat at your restaurant, I ate one of your meals at a festival, and when they ask for them to take a book and give a donation, they do. So they notice it. The Aussies are good to preach to because they're very favourable to Krishna consciousness. And when we go chanting downtown and you see people jumping up and down, you see people chanting Hare Krishna, which is just like, wow. Never seen the person before. And they're chanting Hare Krishna along with the kirtan party. Woo! What's going on here? So what it means is that the environment is very favourable. People are very favourable. But still, we have to be mindful of their mentality. And so therefore, because there's this enjoying mood, we have to present Krishna consciousness in a way that's enjoyable for them. You know what I mean? This is, you know, you have fun. You go out to have fun. This is part of the consumer society, is that you should have fun. Right? So, we as a community need to think about these things, and one of the reasons next couple of weeks are going to be you know, probably an opportunity to do quite a bit of service, because in Arjuna Maharaj's program really seeks to connect with, you know, the greater community that we live in, Port Phillip and surrounding areas, and plus the programs that we're doing in Fitzroy. And we need to think of, you know, how we're actually going to then cultivate those people. Okay, it's one thing to connect with them, but then we also need to have the facilities whereby we can look after them. Huh? And we should be mindful of the fact that, you know, when the Western people come to the Hare Krishna temple and they're surrounded by a sea of Indians, it's going to be a challenge for them. So we have to work out how we're going to do that. You know, for a lot of us, that's not a problem. But for some, it can present some issues. Not always, though. It's interesting, you know, in Australia, people actually like India. And you know what they're attracted to most?
Cricket.
not when the Indians are winning. If the Aussies are winning, yeah, okay. No, there's something that the Australians are attracted to. What do you think the Australians are attracted to?
Bollywood.
Yes, Bollywood. And what's Bollywood all about? It's all about enjoying, right? Isn't it? You know, every movie's got a dance in it every 5 minutes. Somebody breaks into a song and starts dancing. It used to be like that. I don't know whether it's like that still. You know, we used to fly Air India all the time. And, you know, they used to, in 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they only had one screen. And, you know, it was right in the front of everybody, so you had to watch whatever the Bollywood movie was if you were flying Air India. And we used to laugh because every 5 minutes there'd be a song and everybody would be dancing all around the place. You know, out in the street, out in the middle of the fields, wherever. Very funny. But people are attracted to that. So, you know, we've got to think about these things. You know, when the temple president came from Jagannath Puri, and he came in, the first thing he said to me, he said, "You're a pure Aussie." I had to explain the book. Pure and Aussie don't go together. It's oxymoron. It's not right. But he's getting on my case. He's saying, you know, there's all these Indians here. We're the Aussies. You should be preaching to the Aussies. Of course, one of the ladies pointed out, he didn't realise that the Aussies were, you know, that Pyramid Rock, and they were doing Prashadam distribution. No, it was Meredith. That was a weekend of Meredith. So, you know, I was saying, well, we're preaching to the pure Aussies down at Meredith. But it was interesting, he was saying, Prabhupada didn't want this, you know, Prabhupada wanted us to preach to the Westerners. I said, what am I going to do if the Indians come out to say, sorry, well, you're not allowed here? No Indians allowed. Right? We only want pure Aussies. If there is such a thing. So how do we tell? So anyway, peculiar set of challenges faces, you know, in the opportunities that exist for our preaching. And of course, Inajuna Maharaj's trip's coming, and we've got some shows, and we want to promote them. We're not charging for them, and we've got a lot of flyers to distribute. So if you've got some spare time this week and next week, then you can see Sri Krishna Chandra, and he'll tell you where to go. We've got enough flyers now. Yeah. So, you know, there's an opportunity for us. You know, if anybody's got any suggestions about how we could do these things, then send me an email. Or get on Facebook. Send me a message. and we can improve our preaching, I suppose, that's the idea. Does anyone have any comments or questions about any points? Yes.
Madam, what are your ideas? Okay, you are asking for ideas. What are your ideas to begin with?
My ideas. I've got a lot of big ideas, but whether they're practical or not, that's another thing. My ideas are and we're probably not putting them into practice at the moment as much as I would like. No, we're definitely not. When we're preaching, then we should be giving people an opportunity to get back to us, right? So our literature should always have what they call a reply device. You know what a reply device is? It means people can write back to you and say, yes, I want this or that or the other thing. So we should be promoting our services, right? Our activities in such a way so that we can connect people to devotional activities. Now, we can do that through cooking classes, we can do that through yoga, we can do that through literature, we can do that through educational programs. We can do that we can even encourage people just to come to the temple, I suppose, and, you know, come for meditation, come at 5 o'clock in the morning for some meditation. You know, there's different ways.
When you use
videos
and feast.
Yes, there's another thing. No, that's a good point. One of the things we need to do with the Saturday program, maybe not the Saturday program, certainly with the Sunday program, because that's the one we tend to promote to an outside audience, is we need to perhaps modify that program in such a way so that we take into consideration that many people come at 6 o'clock for prasadam and then 7 o'clock aarti, and then we could have some activities after the 7 o'clock aarti, right? Use the theatre, put on shows, you can even do more plays or whatever. There are things, there are activities that we can do that can cater for the entertainment of people, you know what I mean? So if we think of the Sunday program more as a means for entertaining people rather than a means for preaching, right? Then we connect. You know, there's so many things. We have a brainstorming session and come up with about 1,000 ideas, I would say. And everybody here is pretty intelligent and insightful, so we'll come up with a lot of stuff. Then you know what the hard part is? Doing it. Yeah. So getting organised is probably our challenge. You know, there's no dearth of ideas, but getting ourselves organised. And and here's another thing. We have to, in our meetings in London, we were discussing the reality of ISKCON today. ISKCON today is not the same as it was in the 70s and the 60s. And there was a survey done of 23 gurus in ISKCON. 96% of initiated disciples do not live in a temple. And that number is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, it can't get much bigger than 96%, but the quantity, you know, the number of devotees, if we're successful in outreaching, then the number of devotees actually living in a temple will always be small. So we have to also then take into consideration what that means in terms of how we structure and organise ourselves and how we train people, because Prabhupada wanted, obviously, the same standards of devotional practice in the house as he did in the temple. It would be a modified program because, you know, you've got to go to work and you've got a family to maintain, right? But Prabhupada told Giriraj Maharaj, you know, the temple is like the flagship which sets the standards. But that standard is the same standard that we want in the homes. of the devotees. They should be chanting 16 rounds. They should be helping to support the preaching. You know, Prabhupada said, and Prabhupada was totally consistent on this point, that a householder should give 50% of his income for preaching Krishna consciousness. Now, how are we going to do that? Who even thinks about it? Who doesn't want to think about it? Right? Prabhupada said, you live in the temple, you give everything. Right? But if you're a householder, you give 50%. Now, you won't find Prabhupada compromising on that point. So we have to take this into consideration. How are we as an organisation going to take care of all of those devotees? And how is we as an organisation of those devotees going to set the standards? So we have to think, we have to start thinking very differently. Well, actually in our community, we already think like that in any case. Do you know what I mean? How many devotees here actually live in the temple? Raise your hand.
3, 4, 5, 6.
And how many devotees are there here? 60, maybe. So 10%. Right? Live in the temple. But actually it's more than that. When I say more than that, there's more householders than there are. So that's the reality of our communities. Right? So that means we've got to get organised. Pray Lord and Trinidad to remove the obstacles. But that's, you know, that's, so probably here, I think, you know, this year we'll have to start thinking how we're going to organise the householder groups, who are going to be the leaders. And when I say leader, doesn't mean, you know, you're the big guy who tells everybody what to do. Because leader means actually a servant of all the other devotees. But we need to organise that. You know what I mean? So that we can maintain the standards that Prabhupada wanted. In order to get initiated, Prabhupada wanted us to be chanting 16 rounds and following the principles. And he wanted us to be distributing books, but more importantly, he wanted us to read the books. So that we know what's in them. Otherwise what happens is, you know, we become a devotee, we chant Hare Krishna, and then we think, yes, now I'm doing okay. And then, but what happens is you fade away. Most of the devotees, they don't follow strictly, then what happens? They fade away. And we don't want people fading away because that's a great loss. Great loss for us, but more of a loss for that person. So that means, you know, how do we maintain high spiritual standards in a broad-based, you know, community-based organisation? What kind of an organisation is it? It's definitely not IBM. Right? Or whoever, you work for one of the universities, right?
No?
Oh, for the government. Yeah, so it's not the government. But the government has to be organised in order to do things. So we have to be organised in order to do things, right? So how are we going to organise ourselves? Right? We have to be organised. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was organised. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was created an institution, or we won't say institution, organisation, but based on the same sort of principles. So we need to get organised. And then we have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, how many hours do you work in your job? A week. 40 to 50. Yeah, so you don't have a lot of time to be organised. In fact, you probably don't want to be organised outside of your work. Right? So it has to be done in such a way so that we recognise, well, hang on, this guy's already working 50 hours a week, so we're not going to get another 50 out of him. Right? You have to, you know, your wife has plans for you. And so do your boys, right? They've got plans. And then, you know, you've got plans and you're thinking, oh no, how can I be peaceful? So this is why, you know, we want to be Krishna conscious first, But then we want to expand and you know. So we need to organize ourselves, first of all, to be Krishna conscious. Then we need to organize ourselves so that we can bring, you know, others. So I guess, you know, one of the overarching principles for our strategic planning at the moment is look after the devotees. First principle, look after the devotees. Second is make more devotees.
One question and comment. I mean, see, if we as whatever stage we are at, whatever level we are at, you know, to invite somebody new, or typically I take your example, like, you know, more Aussies.
Yeah, more Aussies.
So, you know, just taking into that particular example, as I say, you know, if you have to engage somebody else, you have to be within, around them, with them at times.
Yeah.
So isn't it conflicting, like when once we say association, associate only with devotees.
Yeah.
And then we say, you know, if you have to bring them closer.
It's almost contradictory.
Yeah. So, so there we need, you know, like some kind of a specialized approach, I would say, you know.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about, specialized approach. Yep, definitely. But see, you're in a position where you probably have Aussie friends, right? So then, they respect you?
Yeah.
Yeah, too right. You're probably their boss. Right? Do you supervise others?
Not directly,
okay. But there are devotees who supervise others, so they'll be respectful to you. Otherwise they'll lose their job if they can. But anyway, that's the trick. How to do it. Yeah, how to do it. It's not, you know. It's a challenge. Life is a challenge, and that's one of them. First thing is, you know, in order to be a good lifesaver, then you have to be able to swim. Right? A lifesaver is a person who's strong enough to be able to swim and save themselves and save somebody else who's kicking and screaming and pulling them under. Right? Or who doesn't want to be saved. Right? We're trying to wake up people who say they're, you know, who are pretending that they're asleep. Or want to stay asleep. Right? They don't want to be waken up. Don't disturb me. So, you know, it's a challenge. You know, people weren't welcoming Prabhupada to America. Oh, Jai, Swamiji, we've been waiting for you, please come. So Prabhupada had to think, you know, how am I going to introduce Krishna consciousness to these people? You see in that prayer, Bhagavat Marakini Dharma, isn't it? Preaching Krishna consciousness in the West. Prabhupada said, you know, let me dance, make me dance, right? And he also said, you know, so he was sort of praying to Krishna, you know, let me act as your servant. And he said, let me speak in such a way so that they may understand. So Prabhupada was praying to Krishna, you know, I'm your servant and I'm dancing according to your tune, but make my dancing and make my speaking attractive in order to attract others, right? Attract the other. So we have to, I guess, you know, be somewhat prayerful and devotional in our approach and look for Krishna's inspiration and look for Krishna's direction in how to do these things. How's that sound? Not easy, and it's not easy. Oh, another point of, yeah, so, you know, we have to be strong ourselves before we can, we have to be strong, we have to be happy and satisfied in our own circumstance. Then we can bring others. You know, if we're unsettled, we're unhappy, not satisfied, then it's hard to encourage somebody if we're not convinced ourselves. But if we're strong, enthusiastic, and satisfied in our own Krishna consciousness, then we can bring others. So we have to come to that stage of, you know, being strong. You don't become a lifesaver with your beginner certificate. No? Beginner certificate, when I was a kid, meant you could swim 25 yards dog paddle. Right? You know what dog paddle is? Just swimming like this, you know, like a dog. But to be a lifesaver, you have to be really, you know, strong. So first of all, we have to be strong. Then we can do the other things. Anything else? Yes,
I think Indian swimming program is very sound because entertainment and education both.
Yes, that's right. More emphasis on entertainment.
Very lovely entertainment.
Anything else?
I see that our books are actually reaching people. They are reading them because I noticed one of my colleagues, she reads that the Prabhu book every time she goes out for smoking.
Yeah. There you go. That's a challenge, isn't it? Yeah. No, it's a fact. Everybody, people who go to the restaurants, you know, they sit and they read. They may not like what they read, but they're reading it. They're gradually going to read. All right. I think we should finish here. Gandharva Chinna Bhagavatam Ki Jai.